50 communities across this country doing simultaneous demonstrations. We'll have a week of more demonstrations because, again, this is happening all over the country. I'll give you the severity of this and why this case is so important. We have one state that has made it a felony for people to be on public property. So it's really targeting homeless or people experiencing homelessness, and they can get a felony with up to 6 years in jail. There's also a state that has legislation that would make the stand your ground provisions part of how homelessness is addressed in that state. And so people can use force up to and including deadly force to move people experiencing homelessness from their property. So this is actually getting more dire as we speak every day, and we have to make a stand. And yesterday was our stand. Yesterday was our time that we came together as a community and said, we are not taking this anymore. You have to do something better. You have to provide housing and supportive services and living wages, the structural issues that really can change homelessness.
Wow. And, you know, and Caitlin, you were, you know, all three of you actually were speakers yesterday, but you were a speaker and you talked about your experience, your personal experience, very movingly, of having been, you know, homeless for 5 years. Caitlin, one of the things I loved about the rally, everybody, was how they addressed the misconceptions and mythologies and stereotypes around homelessness. Caitlin, what are the stereotypes? What are the misconceptions?
The stereotypes are that homeless people are lazy, they're drug addicts, they all have mental illnesses. And one of the more powerful pieces that I heard yesterday that really stuck out to me was just that addiction doesn't cause homelessness, but people become addicted because they are homeless. And that's
right.
So true, because, you know, when you're homeless, you can turn to things such as escapism and that kind of thing. But most homeless people actually work. When I was homeless, I held 2 to 3 jobs working 7 days a week consistently and still couldn't afford a place to live, because the actual number one cause of homelessness is lack of affordable housing.
And that's the other part of this, Ms. Facinelli, is that this is not an unsolvable problem. This is not a problem that has no answer. You know, there is an answer here, right, to preventing, you know, people having to sleep on the streets. There are answers. And why don't we talk about those policy answers and why it is so, therefore, so despicable that people are being criminalized and punished instead of these options being made available through public policy.
Absolutely. So, and I'm so glad you presented it this way. Homelessness is absolutely solvable. And in fact, I think it's important for us to share with your listeners that that in our country, we only began seeing the kind of mass homelessness that we have to this day really in the 1980s, when the federal government started defunding of affordable housing across the country and eliminating many of the safety net programs, the financial safety net programs that were providing supports to people with very low incomes. And so the consequence of that, the consequence of losing that supply of affordable housing and losing those financial supports, is the kind of very large mass homelessness that we have to this day. And the reality is that homelessness is actually increasing in our country. So the federal government earlier this year released data from its count of unhoused people in 2023, and nationwide homelessness increased over 12% in a year. So this is a problem that is actually only getting worse. And as a result, the federal government must respond. And the way that it must respond is by dramatically increasing funding for affordable housing and for income supports. But there are also things that state and local legislators can do. State legislatures can expand funding for affordable housing as well as income supports. But what's really critical, and getting back to the issues in this case, is that punishing people who are unhoused, and to use the facts in Grants Pass, those residents literally have nowhere to go but to sleep outside, and punishing them only makes homelessness worse.
Wow. Wow.
Thank you, Barbara. And with the Grants Pass case, I'm wondering, Ms. Finelli, if, you know, the question is oftentimes asked with those that are experiencing housing insecurity or are unhoused, if they're sleeping in the parks. Does Grants Pass really just focus on the parks, or is it also talking about any public where any public space, like under the bridges and things like that? Does it cover all of those things in that case, or are they just trying to cover parks and open areas like that?
No, it's broader for sure. And in fact, they're also issuing fines and citations to people who are sleeping in vehicles if they happen to actually own a vehicle. What's distinct, and again, this came out in the arguments yesterday as well, is that although the law that Grants Pass enacted on its face applies to anyone who is sleeping in their vehicle or sleeping outside, even if they have a home of their own, the way that local police are actually enforcing the law is they are only punishing people who lack housing. And so they are selectively issuing those punishments to people who are homeless, who are actually the folks least able to be able to pay those fines and to be able to find a place to live. It is a particularly cruel approach. The word draconian has been applied in this particular situation. It is extreme. There's no question.
Wow.
How do you distinguish then, you know, what comes to my mind, and I don't know, Stasinelli, if it's you or Donald Whitehead or Caitlin, how do you distinguish then? I thought that the Grant Pass argument was based on public land, was based on parks, was based on, you know, the ownership of the bridge or whatever the public facility is. If you have an unhoused person that's in their vehicle, how do you then cite them and say that, you know, look, you're what? You're in violation of our code because you're living in your car? I don't get it. The county, the entity, the municipal government doesn't own the car. The person does. Help me with this.
It doesn't matter. And this happens, again, all over the country. There are people who have their vehicles confiscated in California, for instance, in one of the most progressive states in our country, because they've been in it for a period of time that the law enforcement sees as too long. So, again, we have already seen this. And then in California, there is existing law that says you can't criminalize or fine or ticket or jail a person if they don't have enough shelter. And this is really a response to that. And Antonia can talk a little bit more about that. Here's a couple of other things. This is not a no-cost approach to homelessness. So it actually is more expensive to approach homelessness with this as a solution than it is to provide housing. And again, it also makes the person's path out of homelessness more complicated because now they're doing it with a criminal record, which keeps them from being able to get employment or get housing.
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, it's just so important. You know, one thing I want people to know is, in case they want to see, you know, more information about where they can go, one thing that is beautiful is that there is public access to the broadcast of the press rally and the, you know, and the demonstrations. Caitlin, how do people see the broadcast, and how can they, you know, go and really watch and learn so much more? Because there were amazing speakers yesterday. Go ahead.
Yeah, the National Homeless Law Center live streamed the entire event on Twitter. You can go to their Twitter at homeless_law to see the rebroadcast. I believe it is also their pinned tweet right now. You can also learn more about the case as well as facts, resources, and how to take action in your community by going to johnsonvgrants.com. That's a website made by the National Homeless Law Center for specifically for this case and the issues around this case.
Thank you. And that's so important. You know, I thought, you know, Reverend Barber yesterday when he spoke, Bishop Barber from Repairers of the Bridge National, you know, the Poor People's Campaign, he spoke about the need for us to not, you know, to not only we'll change our public policy, but he talked about the need for those who are poor, those who are impoverished, those who are homeless to exercise their vote. He talked about the upcoming march that's going to be held on June the 29th in D.C. There's going to be a march on Washington on June 29th. And he urged people to support that march, but he also talked about the vote. And Donald Whitehead, Mr. Whitehead, we have been talking transformative justice, and the National Coalition have been working on creating a partnership. You have so many amazing partners around the country, but we've been working specifically on a partnership to focus on the vote. Can you talk about the criticality of making sure that those who are homeless are also powerful voters?
Absolutely. And Antonia and the Law Center and the National Coalition for years have published voting rights manuals to provide in-depth information about voting laws in every state. And we continue to do that this year, but this time in collaboration with the Transformative Justice Coalition, we want to go a step further and actually register people to vote around the country. And it is so critical, and Reverend Barber raised this yesterday. He raised the idea that some of these elections are decided by less than 100 votes.
That's right.
In all of the battleground states, you know, there wasn't a enormous amount of votes that really had an impact on changing the course of this election. And if we can register people, now one thing I know about people experiencing homelessness is they're not a monolith, and you can't really predict how each individual vote, but it's important that they exercise that right. You know, we have unalienable rights. We were promised that in this country. One of them is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But it's also we gained the right to vote in this country. People died for that right. You guys talked about it in the opening about the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
Yeah.
So many people have sacrificed for us to have the rights that are afforded in this country. And it really goes back to the issue around Grant Past. And I think you've raised this issue over the course of this conversation. People experiencing homelessness are people, too.
Yeah.
They're teachers, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're seniors, they're children. And they should be given and afforded every right that every citizen in this country is afforded. And we can't treat them in a disparate way or treat them in a way that causes them harm just because of their economic condition. We're better than that. We're a country that is the richest country in the world. And why in the world would we use criminalization? It's been proven ineffective over and over again.